Good morning.
Oh my goodness. Good afternoon, everybody.
Good morning.
Remember, I'm the thing keeping you from lunch, okay? Everybody remember that. And I'll take you to that too in case I go on too long. Hold on a second here. Get my cane pulled up. So, that was very nice. Thank you all so much for the resolution. I would have been happy with an aloha, so thank you very much. I have very much loved getting a chance to meet folks around here. Tonight we're going to talk about storytelling. I'm not going to get into too much right now, but when I have the opportunity to speak with you all later, we're going to be talking about some storytelling. And I've loved getting a chance to hear all the stories of all the members last night at the hospitality hour and just over the past couple days that I've been able to be here on the island from the mainland. I wanted to share with you all during this opportunity this afternoon, or almost in the afternoon. I'll try to promise not to go past noon because I know that's when the lunch break is. But what I'd like to do today is share with you a little bit of news of what's taking place in Washington. Some of the advocacy that we've actually been working on, but some of the direction that ACB has been taking on a national level. And it's a very exciting time to be working in the national office for the American Council of Blind. We are trying every day to live up to our mission, and we know that without the membership around the country, we couldn't live up to that mission. We would have no organization without the people. So on behalf of Kim Charlson, our president up in Boston, and as well Eric Bridges, our executive director, who I think many of you know, he had this opportunity to come out to the same hotel a number of years ago. I send thanks from our organization for your dedication, your ongoing advocacy, and the tireless work you all do to support blindness and issues around vision impairment here in the state of Hawaii, working closely with legislators, as we heard this morning, with the service providers, as we heard earlier as well from Leigh and from others, but also to just the fellowship and the family that you have as an organization. Because in a sense, again, that is the heart of the organization. So it's very much an honor and a privilege to have that extension and that fellowship shared here today. So I think in a real sense, the real advocacy thanks goes to all of you. I have the best job in the country. My job is to get to go up to Congress and brag about you all. I get to occasionally complain as well, but a lot of times I try to live up to what Dr. King, an advocate once told me about Dr. King. He never said I had a complaint. Right? He always talked about I had a dream. And so, I have the best job in the world in that my job is to go tell the stories of others. And again, we'll talk tonight about storytelling, but I wanted to share with you all some of the things that's actually taking place right now in Congress and with the administration, how that's going to be affecting the world of blindness, about rehabilitation, about services, but also just about the life that we incur as Americans who are blind or visually impaired. And in that, there are some challenges. Anybody knows when they turn on the news, Washington is not the most functional place in the world. But I think it's fair to say, though, that there are still, at the core, hardworking people like Wolford that you heard from earlier, working for the VA, people working within RSA, people working within the Department of Labor, within the various agencies, and even in Congress with the staffers that meet with, that are real diehard people dedicated to trying to make this a better government that serves the people of a government of the people and by the people, okay? So in that spirit, don't believe everything you hear on the news that Washington is just a bunch of crazies. I feel like that more with my kids than I do sometimes with Congress. So, there are still hardworking people. And you here in the state of Hawaii have excellent leadership amongst your congressional leaders. Remember what was said earlier today, get out and vote, because that is the cornerstone of our democracy. But we can't just stop at voting. We need to continue the civic engagement. So we'll talk a little bit about that tonight as well. What are the challenges we face right now? Over the past 14 months, one of the big challenges from the federal government side, from the administration, is still the unfilled seats. More than half, I would say, of the seats that are appointed seats. So that every new administration gets to appoint leadership across the board that sets the agenda for that administration. Over half of these seats are still not filled. There is a huge shortfall in leadership within the federal government right now, and that's creating a bottleneck in strength just down the wire. It's all the way down to the, some agencies like the Administration for Community Living within HHS, the Health and Human Services Department. That post is filled and there are efforts focusing that they're trying to tackle now on older age issues for disability, which I know is very important for our organization, But we still, if you look over to the Department of Education, don't have someone leading up OSERS. There's a nominated person, but that person has not been confirmed by the Senate from Kentucky. We still don't have a head of the Rehabilitation Services Administration. We still find ourselves in other parts of the program working toward trying to push an agenda, but it's difficult to get that agenda pushed when there's nobody at the top that can hear the agenda. That being said, we are doing what we can to work with acting directors and to engage people on key issues. Leah mentioned earlier today some of those issues around the Rehabilitation Service Administration that we are concerned with. A lot of folks might know that there was a huge, significant overhaul of RSA through what was called WIOA, the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act. And that's created a lot of struggles, particularly for older age Americans. And it's really forcing a lot of us in DC and throughout the country in that sense to rethink the way that services can be provided so that people that are not going to be going out there to get a job in a competitive integrated setting, what are they going to do in order to get services that they need? Because sometimes it can take a year or two. For those that lost their sight later in life, many of us in this room know, it can take a significantly long time to just get the confidence to step outside. So what can we do to give them that confidence? For those that maybe could go back to work, you know, that can plant a seed for them. But what can we do to provide the services as well, like with the older individuals with blindness program? We had our legislative seminar last week in Washington, D.C., where we had over 100 advocates from affiliates around the country. We had people calling in and writing and emailing to members of Congress as well that could not be there. And one of the issues we focused on was the older individuals with blindness program. And the fact that we need to make sure that funding is secure for that, but it needs to tie into a larger conversation of how can we meet the people where they are and get them the services, the low vision tools. I think a lot of us know when you think of what a $500 iPhone can do, how many thousands of dollars of that was a fraction of what it can do in 1990, right? So what can we try to do to get technology in the hands of people that helps them be more independent? We're working on that. I've been fortunate to be part of the National Accreditation Council, which is the accreditation body that's being completely revamped, taken over by AER, which is the Association of Education and Rehabilitation for Blind and Vision Impaired. We've been working to redo that for reaccreditation of the service providing agencies around the country. We're rewriting the standards and really trying to find a way, too, in doing that, to have conversations about how can we provide services better. And that's no more important than for older age Americans, which is where the focus needs to be for our community. I mean, there's no doubt that we're continuing to advocate on things like the Cogswell-Macy Act, which is a piece of legislation that says, how can we spend our money smarter for kids? Has anybody heard of the Cogswell-Macy Act?
Yeah.
That's good, a few people in here have. But you know, we spend $12 billion a year in special ed spending. We need to spend that money smarter. And the Cogswell-Macy Act is a piece of legislation now in the House and the Senate that we're working to try to get the message out there that we can spend our money better for the kids. But we still know that the lion's share, the largest number of people that need to get served in our community are the older age individuals. And so keeping them out of isolation, getting them in the community, getting them independent, is going to help their health, it's going to help the long term, and going to save government money. Now that's a big message we're talking about right now, save government money. One of the big things that happened in Washington the past year was the tax reform bill. It is the only piece of legislation that Congress has really been able to shepherd through that was of any large scale. We've still not got a budget for the federal government. We're operating on what's called continuing resolution, CR. Those that maybe work with federal agencies know it. Basically, a continuing resolution says that we're going to spend what we spent last year or the year before that or whatever this continued amount is. And we just keep spending. They're not readjusting. They're not putting more money in. They're not making dramatic cuts, which is actually a good thing because there's been a desire by many to do significant slashing to the federal government. But we're still under continuing resolution until March 23rd, and the government is working toward a budget that they agreed upon. It's actually going to be an additional $200 billion more. So anybody that does some work with the Department of Defense, or just here by the nature of Hawaii and the role that the military plays in this state, you know, that's going to bring some additional dollars, I think, to the Pacific particularly, since the campaign in the Pacific is becoming a little bit more engaging with North Korea. So, and I hear the hesitation. I know I don't have to mention anything about North Korea this often. But in that sense, we find ourselves, you know, working towards the federal budget of trying to protect what is important for us. And that's one of the things we're doing in Washington is fighting to keep what we're going to have. And the reason is because the tax reform bill, plus the additional $200 billion, is going to do something that a lot of us might remember from just basic high school class of economics, about supply and demand, right? And we know that there's more people that need services, but we're about to get into a major supply shortage of funding. We're expected to have $1.5 trillion deficit because of the tax reform bill. Without a lot of Republicans I've talked to in congressional staff don't see, and that's over 10 years, but still a significant amount of money that is going to be lost. It could be providing better education. It could be providing more money for the older individuals with blindness program, independent living programs, VA services and care. Fortunately, the VA oftentimes gets a good, its budget request set. But to that end, we find ourselves in a situation where revenue cuts cannot be ignored because the money just isn't going to be there. We can only ask for so much more money. So one of the things that we're really trying to do, and this is where you all come into play, okay? Who in the room has ever reached out to a congressional member, a senator, house member? That's nice to hear, but it's not everybody in this room. What we need to have everybody in this room do, even if you're not 18, even if you can someday be a voter, right? If there's somebody out there that can get to some form of communication, a telephone, an email, reach out to your member of Congress, to your two senators, your local representatives here for the state of Hawaii, and let them know what programs are important to you, and those programs need to be protected. All right? We're fortunate this year that there's not going to be huge, drastic budget cuts. But the reality is, when that money is not rolling in over the next year because of the significant tax cuts that's taking place in our government, we're going to have a revenue shortfall, and there's going to have to be serious decisions made, and no one's going to like to do that. So there's a lot of noise in Washington, D.C. It's so nice to get so far away from that noise right now. But I will tell you that noise is only going to get louder, because once we get to a point, we're going to have to advocate more. And we can't do that alone in Washington. The best commodity for members of Congress are all of you. Who's registered to vote in this room? Doesn't sound like everybody, right? But there's still a lot of people in this room. You all are the commodity of Congress, right? We've seen that in the recent elections when the huge super PACs were funding other candidates. It was the grassroots bases that got candidates up there, right? We saw it in 2008 in Obama. We saw it in 2016 with President Trump, that it's the grassroots, it is the members that vote of America that set the agenda.
Use the words together, President Trump.
Trump.
I
know I'm in a good state. So, to that end though, you all are engaged just in that conversation as grassroots, right? You need to get out and vote, right? That's what changes the tide. So to that end, I encourage everybody to get out and vote, because we've seen in the last two major presidential elections that it is the populace that's the main commodity. And it's not just for the role of president. We're not in another 2 years for that one. The members of Congress, the House representatives, are playing a huge part of this conversation. They're the ones that are going to predict this program. So I want to give a commitment out to everybody. Vote. But don't just vote. Call. Email. Do whatever you can to protect those programs. Okay? Can I get that promise from everybody?
Yes.
Oh, what kind of enthusiasm is that? We are the democracy. So that's what I like to do. The plot is spreading. We are the democracy in this country. We are the votes that make the members of Congress, basically pass the laws and pass the budgets we need. So remember that. That's the key thing. In terms of ACB, it's a very excellent time to be part of ACB. I'm very excited. Folks might remember Eric Bridges, who I mentioned here, was here a few years ago. I have the grace of when Eric asked me to come fill his post, because we've been friends for a while and I've been doing advocacy and other disability issues in D.C. I was very humble when he asked me he wanted me to join his team and come on board and take his old role. He's leading as executive director now and is doing an outstanding job. And I say that in case you talk to him, let him know I said that. He's done an outstanding job of turning the organization around from what was years of having to dip into reserves and bleeding budgets to a revenue positive course for the next few years. We have received significant charitable donations that's helping us long term establish some smart ways to spend our money for the long term and to make investments in the organization. And there'll be news of that at the convention this year. But also at the same time, We've really expanded our corporate portfolio of allies. I've been very fortunate to work with a lot of the leading tech companies, a lot of the major corporations. We've been really working hard in autonomous vehicle space. I was over at the Department of Transportation the other day with NHTSA testifying and speaking to some of the issues that are important for people who are blind. But we've been working alongside General Motors, along Uber, along had meetings with Volkswagen. We have engaged with Toyota, Audi, all the companies that are getting in this space. And the key thing is autonomous vehicles aren't just going to transform mobility. They're not going to transform safer streets for people's pedestrians. I know I've been hit 3 times. My wife always says I have bad karma. But they, in a sense, are going to revamp the world that is technology that augments the sensory perception. Because that's what these driverless cars are doing on the road. There's 125 on them on the streets of San Francisco right now. General Motors is committed to having an autonomous driverless fleet on the road in 2019. They already have a factory that can match up to scale in Michigan that can start cranking out these vehicles. We're just waiting on the regulatory reform, but we're working along the way to make sure the cars are accessible, that they're smart on the street, knowing to identify a cane or a person with a stroller, all these different attributes of our environmental surroundings. These cars are getting smarter and smarter every day. But it's also driving technology like artificial intelligence so that you can put on a pair of glasses and the glasses will start telling you what's around. And so it's driving all new types of technology. In ACV, we're very fortunate to be at the center point of conversations with Google, with Microsoft, with Aira, which is a new high-tech company for blindness services using technology. And we're very fortunate to be in the conversations and at the table to find out ways that we can make our world more independent, right? So that there's not impediments because of our vision loss, but there's empowerment opportunities. So that's what we're doing with our corporate partners, and the corporate partners are respecting our work and admiring it, and in turn, providing support in a lot of the projects we're working on, and that's providing revenue and helping us be an even more stable organization. So we're very fortunate in that sense, and we're also working towards a strategic plan we just went through. We've redefined our advocacy for strategic advocacy goals and are committed to working on technology. If it's an appliance in your house that isn't talking, if it's using a mobile device in a way that's new and creative. We're also working in the terms of voter space. We're going to have a voter rights toolkit coming out in the next month or so because of the election this year that's going to get more people, not just yourselves, out to vote, but more people that you might know that aren't registered to vote. We're going to be working in a lot of other spaces. We're still pushing the currency case for accessible currency. Do we have any veterans in the room? Any veterans? Does anybody know a veteran who's visually impaired? All right. If you know veterans visually impaired, we received a lot of affidavits that we're using for the currency case. We're still in appeal because they want to push it back to 2026. We're fighting to get that done sooner than so a lot of us that were there when we first brought it to court can actually have it in their hands someday. But we are looking as well, if anyone is a veteran, I'm trying to find veterans as well to give testimony in the form of an affidavit, just a writing that says, you know, it's important as well for the people that served our country to have the country be as accessible as it can be for them, even in times of vision loss. So we're looking for affidavits in that. We are excited about the summer. There's a little town called St. Louis, and there was a famous song called Meet Me in St. Louis. And I'm going to make a pitch now for St. Louis. I've heard that some people want to save up for New York, but I'm going to say this. New York is not in New York City. I say this as an ex-New Yorker. It's in Rochester, New York, which is a great town, but it's way, way far away from New York City. St. Louis, world-class food, world-class culture. We're in Union Station, which is one of the great train stations of the Western expansion of the United States, at a hotel, a walking distance from Cardinal Stadium, and we're going to have an exciting program. One of the things I'm focused on is a grassroots advocacy boot camp for people. So, you know, we have some great advocates here in town, like Don and Anthony and Art and others, but we want to get more people that are advocates. So we'll be having a program specifically this year that's like a grassroots boot camp for part of the day. And it's just an amazing town. I lived a little while in St. Louis when I was doing some work at St. Louis University. And I can't say enough to encourage people, try to get out to St. Louis this summer. We need to get together and find fellowship, but also unite as individuals who are blind and visually impaired around the country to make our voice louder. And it's no louder than it can be at national conventions. So I encourage you. It is you know, in the middle of the country, in the mainland, but it is, you know, it's doable. It's not too far once you get to LAX or San Francisco or San Diego. So to that end, I hope that we'll have the opportunity to get a chance to speak with some of you more in national convention in the week of July 4th this year. So I am open as well to anybody. How are we on time? Where's my time at? Let me check real quick.
10 minutes.
I got 10 minutes. So I got time for some questions. If anybody wants to, any questions about what's taking place in the national office or nationally in Washington, D.C., around blindness or around anything else. I left and it was snowing on Wednesday, so it's nice to know. Anybody?
I have a question, Tony. Every year at the convention, Google comes up and makes a presentation. And nobody seems to ask him, when in the hell are they going to make Google Chrome really accessible to the blind? Because as far as I'm concerned, it isn't.
So one of the things that I hate about our organization is we all operate sometimes under non-disclosure agreements, so I can't always share everything. What I can tell you is this. There is a commitment of folks that are running software, not Google-related software, but major software for office work that everyone knows the name out of Seattle. And there is an effort to make it greater on Chrome, which I think is going to be a huge step forward. I actually have a Chromebook. I have a Pixel phone here. I have a Google phone in my pocket. I'm an avid supporter of Google and their efforts. I will say, though, too, that you're right. There needs to be improvements, and we continue to push for that. We are meeting, over the summer. Laura, who does the Chrome Sphere, in a sense, is working hard to try to make it more accessible. The challenge is sort of just the ecosystem that the Chrome exists on, this sort of HTML5 and this world that is a little bit more dynamic. And sometimes it's harder to find the solutions necessary. But to that end, if you were to do a curve of like how Apple and Microsoft have gotten up to speed with accessibility and compared that to Google's curve, I think Google is still a little steeper and getting up and running faster. But you're right, it's not perfect. But as long as we're continuing to work with them, and there will be some stuff I think they can announce this summer, and we can announce through other partnerships that the space is becoming more and more accessible. The great thing is because Chrome is, when you get to those computers where you can buy a computer for $199, $150 that runs Chrome, which is all bells and whistles attached to it, the same way as a $1,000 Chromebook, it's an affordable way to get technology into the hands of people. So.
MLB has dropped back. You notice that they made some adjustments that are not helpful to us.
MLB, the Major League Baseball?
Yeah.
I'm finding that out now that my kids are starting baseball.
I'm working with somebody there to try to help.
Let us know what we can try to do in engaging in the national office, because that's an area
you just need to protest.
Yeah.
Tell them we want the alternate back.
Okay.
Because otherwise we get the screen reader talks to us.
Okay. I'll maybe touch base with you afterwards. But yeah, we definitely have that as an issue.
To work with, but they need more than just me.
And it'd be great to get. Well, we can also try to think about getting a resolution this summer as well to amplify the voice.
Well, they've been helpful. They've been really helpful.
Yeah, but and sometimes the resolutions can be softer, so they can encourage them and just guide them. But it gives amplification.
I'd like to have a fix before the baseball season.
Well, you're giving me 2 weeks. And 3 days of that is going to be flying here and back to San Diego for another conference. So I'll just see what I can do by the 28th. So, okay. So, any other questions?
Tony.
Sure.
Yeah. How is ACB advocating for the Randall Shepherd program?
So, thank you very much for that. The Randall Shepherd program, Eric Bridges and I both had an opportunity to go to Sagebrush just a couple weeks ago, I think it was. Some of you were here.
Feb 11.
Forgive me if you hear some of the same jokes tonight. I apologize. But I will say that there are several issues we've been engaging on. There is an issue with Randall Shepherd around, and not Randall Shepherd in general, but all of RSA and all spending on a cap on spending, where anything over $5,000 needs to get approved by the federal government, not by a state, but any state agency spending money needs to get approval from the federal government. The problem is the federal government doesn't really know what to do or how to give approval, and they're constantly giving wrong answers or nothing's in writing yet. But in the case of Randolph Shepherd, for instance, that is a huge headache if like your freezer goes down or a major piece of capital equipment and you need to get that replenished or a new one. There's headaches, a lot of headaches to try to get that. We've been engaged with RSA specifically on that issue. The other issue, when we had our meeting up on Capitol Hill, one of the three top priority issues we had around budgets was the president's budget with the infrastructure that was going to privatize rest stops. And we were in there in congressional offices talking about how that's going to have significant impacts against the Randolph Shepherd program, who operates a lot of these contracts. So we need safeguards for Randolph Shepherd. We've been hearing that plan probably isn't going to take seed as much as folks want. And we had several allies up in Congress say they would definitely do what they can to try to protect Randolph Shepherd in anything, and just making it aware, because it wasn't directly targeted, but it was a side effect. Other areas we've been focusing on, I was talking to Leah the other day, areas where we can get involved with DOD, and it's very concerning to hear about those contracts. We've done similar outreach and concern in Michigan, where there was a contract that was threatened, and have weighed in. Jeff Tom, who some of you might know from California, has anybody know Jeff? He's now, in a sense, the counsel for Randolph Shepherd, and he's also the chair of our advocacy committee and one of our vice presidents for ACB. So he's a staunch advocate for RSA, the Randolph Shepherd vendors, RSBA, and the Randolph Shepherd Act. And so we're fortunate to have Jeff as well, and he's been helping engage. We engaged in Oregon and some other places. So we're working on it, and it's definitely on our radar for several issues with RSBA. Any other questions?
The accessible currency, it's been talked about numerous times over the past, I don't know how many summers already. Can you share a little bit as to where it's at today? Where
we're at? 2026. The Bureau of Engraving and Printing with accessible currency, they've narrowed down to two patterns that are sort of tactile, embossed, is that the right word? Like raised patterns that will be on the corner of the 5, 10, 20, and 100.
Yeah.
And so they narrowed it down to two. We've done focus groups with them. We've helped them get to that point. The standoff was the Treasury a couple years ago, 2 years ago, said because of counterfeiting measures, but we think this is a false statement they made, but they blamed counterfeiting as the reason why they were delaying the $10 accessible note to 2026. Our thought is, if you're going to have counterfeiting issues, don't you want to get new money out there as soon as possible?
Yeah.
But to that end, they went against the court order. When the judge passed the case in 2008, they thought it was going to be like 2013 we'd start getting money. Mm-hmm. Now it's 2026 with the last 100 bill note not getting pushed out until 2036. We are currently in, we just got a somewhat of a step forward in the U.S. Circuit Court of Washington, D.C., the appellate court within the Circuit Court of Washington. Sent it back to a decision by a judge back to the judge to say you did a bad job of siding on the side of the Department of Treasury, and that's why we're seeking affidavits right now to get the message out that they've been saying, Treasury's been saying that these e-currency readers are God's gift to accessible currency. We disagree with that. I've had a few people say they are helpful, but most people, especially if you got a guide dog in one hand and a kid in the other arm, and you're trying to juggle your phone in a line in public, or I live in inner city Baltimore, so the last thing I want to do is wave around my iPhone and all my money in the air.
Yeah.
So I think it's fair to say that, the e-currency reader versus me just feeling what denomination it is in my coat pocket is a much smarter way to go. So we're pushing that. We wanted 2020, it's 20, almost halfway through 2018 now, so we'll take 2021, we'll take whatever they can get, but we're very upset with 2026, so we continue to advocate the courts in that issue. Our pro bono lawyer that helped us win the case, Jeffrey Levicki, is working hard on it, and he's still doing this pro bono for us in 10 years after we won the case. And he's healthy, and we're hoping he stays in there. We make sure he exercises every day so he can have some accessible currency. But like UK just came out with theirs, and it's a really nice note, the 10 note, the 10 pound, and there's no reason why we can't do it here. Other questions? Do we have appetites?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm going to run away then because I don't want people to think between you all on food. Again, thank you all so much. I'm flattered and humbled, and we'll get a chance to talk more tonight, but I can't wait to talk more to you all until then. So thanks, everyone. And if you ever have an issue, if we ever have any good news, I just got to hire someone to increase my bandwidth exponentially. Email advocacy@acb.org. If we have a discrimination issue, we just won with the airlines, with Delta. We were having personal meetings with Delta. American Airlines, we've been in meetings with. We had our member of our board help United make a reasonable solution for service animals. But if there's any other issues of discrimination, let us know, advocacy@acb.org. Thanks, everyone. Talk to you later.